Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Joining us in studio right now, six-time Stanley Cup champion, New York sports legend, one of the great personalities and athletes that this city has ever seen, Mark Messier, who's got a new book out, No One Wins Alone, which I tell Boomer every single day. I said, listen, you're not winning alone, man. You need me. You need me. Yeah. Mark, good morning. Thanks for being here. How are you?
Great to be in studio, finally.
Yes, yeah. You are the first guy we have had in studio as a guest since the beginning of the pandemic.
Well, it's an honor, then. I'm glad to be the first guy back.
Well, when Al and I were talking about this, I said, only Messier. He has to be the first guy back, and I'm glad to have you here. So you wrote the book, and it's really a memoir. And you did it with Jimmy Roberts, the golf reporter for NBC, a friend of mine from the University of Maryland. So how did this all kind of transpire between the two of you?
I've been asked for many years to write a book. I just didn't have a lot of interest. One is because I knew I was going to have to get really comfortable with somebody that was going to be sitting beside for hundreds, if not thousands, of hours over a two-year span. Met Jimmy. He gave me his book called Breaking the Slump, about the psychology of golfers trying to get out of a rut, which kind of resonated with me because I was more interested in doing something that had a bigger, deeper message than just a memoir. And I was always fascinated with Winner Within and Sacred Hoops, those two by Phil Jackson and Pat Riley, and wanted to do something along those lines. And so loved Jimmy. Thankfully, Jimmy said yes, and couldn't have picked a better partner to collaborate on this with.
Now, did Jimmy want it to be a salacious book? Was he trying to get all the old locker room stories and you got to slam this guy like the Katie Couric book?
I wasn't interested in that at all. I wanted it to be really a positive book because I had such an amazing positive experience over 26 years of professional hockey, and I didn't see any need whatsoever in trying to make it inflammatory in that regard. I thought there was too many positive messages that would resonate more.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no question about that. And I know your story, but you and I do have something in common. Mm. And these guys make fun of me all the time. And then as I'm reading your story, and I know your story, but as I'm reading more into it, I understand that you also had a pony growing up. Did you not?
We did in Portland, Oregon.
Yeah, you had a Shetland pony, right?
We had a Shetland pony, absolutely.
Right, so I had a pony as well. Yep. Mine was, I think, more of a service pony because I lost my mom when I was younger.
Okay.
But you grew up essentially, you know, raising horses, right? You and your brother Doug.
Paul, yeah.
And Paul, but your dad, dad was tough on you guys. There was no give back from your dad, was there?
My dad grew up, Alberta, northern Alberta. And on the farm, riding his horse, you know, 50 miles, stuff like that. So he, when he was playing professional hockey in Portland, Oregon, got a little acreage right behind our house. And we had four or five horses and, you know, the normal thing, getting up, doing the, you know, shoveling the stalls out and doing all the chores. And it was a lot of fun. Great memories as kids riding the horses and just taking care of the animals.
You know, a lot of people today, you know, put their kids in hockey school or, you know, hockey on a hockey team when they're young. You started when you were young. And you also, you know, your dad was a coach. You know, he's a player as well. And you tell a story in the book where he was at one of your games and you were all excited that he was coming to one of your games. I think you were 5 or 6 years old at the time. And the puck got dumped into the corner and your dad said, you got to go get the puck. And you said, well, my coach is telling me to go to the front of the net. And he goes, well, how's the puck going to get to the front of the net if somebody's not going to go get the puck? And so that's like a lifelong lesson that you learned from your dad way back when.
Well, I learned many lessons from my dad along the way. But, you know, my dad started the minor hockey league hockey in Portland, Oregon, way back in the 60s from scratch. Had parents that had knew nothing about hockey and introduced the sport and told all the players how to get dressed and right from scratch, if you can imagine. And of course, volunteer coaches because nobody really knew how to coach hockey. And So my dad thought it would be a good idea that I might want to listen to him when he's giving me some instructions.
You tell me your coach
was actually our anthem singer at the Buckaroo games that was coaching.
Really?
Oh, well, hold on.
But,
hold
great,
on.
But a great man, though. But C.J. Lindsay, to this day, one of the greatest guys I've known, and God rest his soul.
Who the hell are the Buckaroos?
Portland Buckaroos were the back in the 60s amazing franchise in the old Western Hockey League that had Seattle and San Francisco and Vancouver. It was kind of a Western Pacific Rim league. It was only back when the NHL had six teams, and it was a great league, professional league.
And the anthem singer was your coach.
The anthem singer, because, yeah, from that. So, and he was giving me all the hockey advice that my dad thought he might know a little bit more than the anthem singer.
Yeah, just a tad. Boomer and Geo with Mark Messier on The Fan and CBS Sports Network. Now, when the Rangers were going through another regime change, we sat here and we were talking about it, and Boomer was wondering, you know, who was going to be next. And your name kept popping up. And I'm thinking, does he really want to do that? Does Mark Messier really want to get involved? How close were you to getting involved on a level with an organization where you're talking about coach, GM, jobs like that?
Yeah, I think there was one point where I was asked to coach, and I said, well, I'll do it under one circumstance, that you make sure that everybody in the room here, the inner sanctum of the Rangers, all agree that it's the right decision. They ultimately went a different direction, which I was okay with. Because
and
if
how
you
long
don't
ago
have
was that?
If you, when they let go John Tortorella.
Okay.
So, you know, the one thing I know in sports is that you have to be around people that believe you're the one that should be in the job. I didn't want to get it for any other reason than that. They decided to go a different way and hired Alain Vigneault, and that was perfectly fine. You know, hockey is something I know obviously very well. I'm not pining to be the coach of the New York Rangers. I'm not pining to be the general manager of the New York Rangers. If someone believes that I can help them in any way in an organization, obviously I would be crazy not to listen, so we'll just see where it goes.
So you are open to doing it. You just want it to be at the right time.
I don't think I'd ever want to be a coach now. I don't think I'd ever want to be a general manager. I think if any position was open to be president of hockey operations, that would be something that I would be interested in. But coaching and managing, I'm not a manager. I've never been a manager. I have a hard enough time managing myself. It's a different skill set. But setting a vision and creating a culture is something that I think I can do and at the president's level there, and hopefully hire the right people and build a team.
Well, you're actually right in this. You know, no one wins alone. I mean, to understand about what it means about culture in the locker room and everything else, and how difficult it must be to become a star, and you come to New York, and obviously you lead us to a Stanley Cup. How hard is it to deal with young players? Because I was just talking to Gio. We're talking about young players around here. So for the Rangers, it happens to be like Alexei Lafreniere. It's Kaapo Kakko. It's Adam Fox. It's Condre Miller. They're all over the roster. How hard is it for, like, say, I don't know, a veteran like Chris Kreider, who's been around, he's been through the wars with the Rangers, dealing with the growth of a young player?
It is difficult, but in the end, I don't think it's any different now than when I started there. You have players that want to play the game. They want to play the game the right way. They have character. They have integrity. They have discipline. They have all the intangibles that you need in order to play on a winning team. It's not easy to win. It's as we've seen and many teams are in all different sports. It's not easy to win. It takes a lot of hard work in order to get there. And when you have young players and you're building a team around young players like the Rangers are, you do have to have patience. They don't know what they don't know. There's so many layers of understanding of winning hockey. It's one thing to be a great player and be able to play in the National Hockey League. It's a whole other thing to be able to play and understand what's expected on a winning team. And these players, they'll get there. If they want to play in that kind of environment, they'll be tested. They'll be asked to do a lot more than they think they're capable of, and eventually they'll get there.
You know, I was reading also in your book, when you were 18 years old, you're playing with guys twice your age. You're playing in the WHA, which is the World Hockey Association, for the Indianapolis Racers, I believe, right? Was there a guy in your team, a Suitcase Smith?
Oh, yeah, Suitcase Smith.
All right, so tell me about Suitcase Smith, because it takes all kinds. I think I got a Suitcase Smith around here, you know, working with these guys.
One of the great characters that I've ever played with. Suitcase was just a magnetic personality, big, gregarious guy, goaltender. One of the crazy things that he would do is he would get dressed and undressed between every period, but he wore 13 pair of socks inside his skates. And I have no idea why, whether his skates were too big and it hurt when he got hit in the toe or whatever it was. But he would get undressed after every period, go take a shower, then completely back dress and put on 13 pair of socks and then go back out there. But one of the crazy stories. But, you know, you're right. I was playing with guys that I was not long before I turned pro at 17. So 14, 13, 14, 15. I watched all these guys on TV, and plus I was collecting their hockey cards to put in my stamp book that we used to get when we fill up at the ESSO service stations there. So it was pretty amazing looking across the ice from Gordie Howe and Davey Keon and Johnny McKenzie and some of the great icons of the National Hockey League that had switched over to the WHA.
So you start in Indianapolis. Now, meanwhile, when you're going to Indianapolis, Indianapolis is trading a guy by the name of
The skinny kid.
Wayne Gretzky. They were trading Wayne Gretzky to Edmonton. Is that right?
That's true, and that is true. And I have the distinction of actually not only being the first or the youngest player ever to fold a franchise, but the distinction of being the youngest player to ever fold two franchises. With the Indianapolis, shortly after five games, they folded, and of course the whole league folded when I finished a year in Cincinnati.
But the interesting thing, though, is the WHA was allowing younger players to play, and they were starting to poach all these players from the original six NHL, weren't they?
Well, poaching is the exact word. They were trying to get these great young players coming out junior before they signed contracts and went into the entry draft in the National Hockey League level to come and join the NHL, and they were actually paying these guys big signing bonuses, much bigger signing bonuses than the NHL was in those days, and it was working. They, you know, you look at the players that those baby Birmingham Bulls that they drafted with Craig Hartsburg and Rob Ramage, and I think Kenny Linsman was there, Mike Gartner, myself. There was eight or nine really young guys, 17 or 18 years old, at 17 actually, that joined the WHA then.
When did Glenn Sather realize that you had something that he wanted to be on his team?
Well, I had to, you know, Glenn knew our family. Obviously, my dad played against Glenn. My dad actually knocked Glenn out one day when they played against each other. So, The WHA Oilers would practice just before us, our junior team. And so there was some familiarity there. So I think the background of my dad, hockey player, Glenn had seen me play some junior hockey and then, of course, playing pro hockey at 17. You know, I think that gave him some confidence that I might be able to get there at some point. But I was a late bloomer. I didn't have time to develop my skills. I was always playing higher up than my age back then. You're allowed to do that. And so I was basically, when I turned pro at 17, I was still working on my skills, and I was a work in progress from a skill development stand, maturity level, everything. It was it took me a while to get there.
Boomer and Geo with Mark Messier. The new book is No One Wins Alone. We're on the Fan and CBS Sports Network. Do you think that to today's player, playing in New York means as much as it did to you when you got here?
I would hope so. I think it does. I think I was so happy when I came to New York and saw the passion from the fan base here, you know, generations of fans. That, to me, was one of the most important things in the winning culture. That helps the winning culture is the fan base and the expectations that go with that. And when I came to New York, that was there. And I think for me, you couldn't ask for anything more as an athlete coming to an environment like this that the expectations are high, but the expectations aren't anything different than you're going to have to do anyways, whether if you want to be a winner, certainly in this city or anywhere else. You still have to have the discipline. You still have to have the passion. You still have to have all the intangibles that we talked about in order to win. And this city forces you to do that. And they're not going to let you off the hook because you're not prepared. You're not ready to play. You take a night off. There are no nights off here. Just like Broadway, there are no nights off. Everybody expects the best when you play here. But to me, that is what pushes players to be and get to that status of being a winner in New York City.
You know, I always felt like when I go to a Ranger game that the opposing team that comes into Madison Square Garden always wants to give their best effort. I don't know if that's a real thing or not. But I know from going to these games since 1968, everybody wants to just drill the Rangers, you know, on Broadway. They want to have their best game. Did you feel that as a player?
Well, we certainly felt that as players when we were at the top of the heap here in first place overall, and everybody's using us as a measuring stick. Mm-hmm. So there's that element. But there's also an element coming to New York where there is a that manic energy, and everybody's excited to come to New York City, play at Madison Square Garden, the greatest arena in the world, the original six team, and all of those things. I remember coming from Edmonton, a little outpost, couldn't believe we had an NHL team in Edmonton, Alberta, and flying here to play with the great Edmonton Oilers and Wayne Gretzky-led team. We were so excited to step onto Madison Square Garden Ice in 1979 and play here for the first time. Couldn't believe it was on the fifth floor of the arena. All the things that, if you've never been here before, that just make you gobsmacked. And I think, Madison Square Garden, the energy makes everybody come here and give it their best shot.
We always use you as the example, when we're talking about someone coming here and winning. We always say, you could be the next Mark Messier. I don't think we've had that yet since you. There hasn't been someone to come from another organization and be as revered since you. Like, we're still waiting. And I'm talking all the teams. I'm not just talking the Rangers.
Yeah,
I'm
many
talking
of us
all the
have
teams.
Tried. You know that.
Yeah, no, I know.
Many of us have tried, but only one of us has actually succeeded. And that's
this
guy over
here.
It was
good timing. I was in the right place at the right time with some great people and some great players like Mike Richter and Brian Leetch and Sergei Zubov.
Leetch, he became your buddy. Like, he was like your...
My
like
brother. Your, he became my brother, yeah. Spent every moment with Brian for those 10 years or more. So what an amazing guy, what an amazing player, what an amazing Ranger.
When you were writing this, was there a story in here that you remembered that you didn't think of that made it into the book?
Many that didn't make it in, many that did. I think one of the hardest parts of writing a book is actually being able to accurately remember every detail of stories that you want to include in the book. As the title goes, no one wins alone. Well, nobody writes a book alone.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because I had so many people that generously gave their time in order to, help me, reflect back, remember stories that, I had long since forgotten. And certainly the details of it, which are so important in writing a book, to make sure you get it right and include the right people and things like that.
How was your relationship with Mike Keenan?
Good. I've loved Mike.
Right. And when he came in, what were like the conversations initially?
I had Mike when he came here at Canada Cups. I knew what kind of...
hard ass?
Well, perceived hard ass that Mike was there. But I can't remember at what stage of the career that I realized that coaches don't know everything. And that was really something interesting for me to absorb, because I was always meant to respect authority, police officers, people in authoritative positions, and certainly coaches fit that category. But at one point, I realized that coaches don't know everything. They're not gods. They make mistakes like everybody else. And I think the coaches that sustain themselves can actually, admit a mistake, self-correct the course, and when they do that, it shows a little bit of humility, but also it gains the trust of the players. And if you have the most important thing a coach can have when they're coaching any team is the trust of the players, and the coaches know that they're not a phony, they're not a fake. They want the right things. They want the best for the players. And if they do make mistakes, it's forgiven and you can move on. So Mike, I think, had been close a couple times to winning a Stanley Cup in Chicago and Philadelphia. And Philadelphia ran up against the great Edmonton Oilers teams.
Yep.
In Chicago, he ran up against Mary Lemieux, the great teams there. But Mike did make mistakes in some of those series there. And when we had enough leadership when Mike made a mistake in New York that we could talk to him, he would listen, and we would self-correct and move on.
So he kind of learned. We got Mark Messier for a few more minutes. I want to ask you also about when did you realize it came, like it was coming to an end in Edmonton? And how great were those Islander teams of the early 80s, and what was it like playing against them?
Yeah, amazing team, tough, structured, resilient.
Achilles is a little overrated, though, right?
Oh, my God. No, are you kidding me? He was one of the scariest guys I ever played with. I love that guy, but he was scary playing against him. But, the Islanders were a real benchmark for not only us but for everybody. But if people remember, we had to play them three times on that five-year span running up to our cup run in the first cup in 84. So we had a lot of... our fill of the New York Islanders until we ultimately were able to beat them on their way to their fifth Stanley Cup.
So who is the greatest team in the NHL in your eyes? The greatest single team? Who had the greatest single year? Any idea? Like who? Like to me, I I think back to my experience against the 85 Bears in that defense.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I've never seen a defense quite like that in my life. And I knew that they were different, and I knew that they were better than any team that I had ever seen.
It's hard to pick a team, because if you just go by statistics, you know, Montreal Canadiens lost 8 games 1 year.
Yeah, but they get all the Quebec kids.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So there's many. Exactly. And then, right. then you know, 60, you know, there's just so many mitigating factors. But I can't imagine a team without Wayne Gretzky on it wouldn't be considered the greatest team ever.
Yeah. How do you think he's doing on TV?
Great.
So are you, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. You like it?
I love it. Yeah.
You do? Okay, good. Yes.
People at ESPN have been TV, so, right? They've been awesome.
Yeah.
They've been awesome to me, and I'm thrilled. I know as a kid what it means to have that game brought into you in your living room with the great Dick Irvin, Danny Gallivan, the great broadcasters when I was a kid playing street hockey. So for me, to be able to go on there and hopefully talk about something that's interesting and educational and entertaining or whatever it is, hopefully I can do that.
I have one more question.
Yeah, and I do too. So quickly, but then we'll end with Boomer. I know Ranger fans out there that are listening want to get your take on this year's team so far and what you've seen. So
let's hear it. Love the changes that they made. You know, you got to have so much diversity to any team if you want to be a champion. You got to be able to play any kind of game that's presented. Teams forever tried to knock us out of games in Edmonton, but we had the toughness and the grit. And more importantly, our star players would play in hard games. And I like the additions to the Rangers this year. They're young. You know, you can see at times, you know, they had on the last road trip, they had some games that they should have been able to close out. They made some mistakes and giveaways. But those are the growing pains that you have to go through when you rebuild and they get some young guys that they're counting on to play in big situations. But they're only going to learn from it. Unfortunately, you can't rush experience. But to answer your question, I really like the direction of the team right now.
Well, Shesterkin's pretty good. He is pretty damn good. And, you know, I'd like to ask you about Connor McDavid, that move the other night against the Rangers. I mean, let's face it, that guy is like on a different planet.
Yeah, it's interesting the amount of talent that's in the game from many different teams, him being and Leon Draisaitl beside him.
Yeah.
Two amazing, electrifying players that bring people out of their seats. And it will be up to them to see if they can drag the rest of the team along with them and win a championship because, you know, great players, all the great players that have ever played in the game have been able to do that. And hopefully they're able to do that in Edmonton and win their championship.
You know, I consider you one of the greatest leaders in the history of sport. I mean, I really do mean that. And the C meant something to you. And it really, and you could see how you played. You could see how you interacted with your teammates, the other team, the officials, the whole thing. The Rangers don't have somebody wearing a C right now. Can you win a championship without a legitimate number one captain?
Well, I don't think there's any absolutes in life, and there's certainly no absolutes in sport. I've always been on a team that has had a captain. Now, I don't like to talk about teams unless I'm actually inside the inner sanctum of the dressing room and understand the personnel that's there and the decision-making from the management and staff. It seems to me that a captain is very important. I'm not sure when the last team that won a Stanley Cup, I think it was back in the 50s, if I'm not mistaken, that has won a Stanley Cup without a captain. So it's not like it can't be done. And I'm sure that the Rangers have identified a player that might be a captain at some point, but maybe it's not ready. So there's so many different decisions that go into it. But I've always been on a team, in my career anyways, that had a captain because I think it's major league important to be able to have a guy that can go between the players and management and have that trust factor in there. So we'll see where it ends up. And
Hopefully they get one. Right, exactly. They get one.
No One Wins Alone, the Mark Messier memoir, is out now. Christmas time is coming. If you got a hockey fan in your life, you got to pick up this book for him. You have to do it.
Well, I know I have a hockey fan in my life. His name is Gunnar, and Mark was nice enough to sign a book over
awesome.
To him.
That's
I think
great.
He signed one to you, too.
Oh,
as well.
Awesome. Thank you. That is tremendous. And
thanks for shaking my hand.
Oh, yeah. You were listening.
And you didn't
listening on the way in.
By the way, you didn't make him cry.
No, I know. Neither did you.
Right. I wasn't trying to.
Yes, you said you were going to try.
Well, no, I didn't say that.
Yeah, all right. Anyway, it was a pleasure having you.
Nice seeing you guys.
Always a pleasure.
Good seeing you guys.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.